fifth case of the day, where Ms. Mullen stays in place. United States versus Johnson. Ms. Alvarado.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Rob Alvarado. I'm with the Federal Defender's Office in Peoria.
Why is this red?
I only
want to hear you because they have the red light on.
I'm sorry. Your Honor, I only have one brief point that I want to make in this appeal, and then I'm going to reserve my rebuttal time because the facts really are fairly short in this case. My point is this. I think in many cases and in the district court's order in this case, the courts have seemed to elevate what some people may consider the relatively brief period of detention as somehow the dominant factor in whether a minor traffic stop is otherwise reasonable. And I think that is short-sighted because it is basically a subjective thing to consider the length of detention. And it's hard for courts to get a handle on whether in an individual stop that is really unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment. And I think if the court looks at the reasonable suspicion, the lack of reasonable suspicion in this case, I think that is much more important than what some might consider the relatively brief detention. Now, it was a little bit over 15 minutes into this stop before the canine alerted on the car. But what we had here was a car stop for a very minor traffic violation, tinted windows. The defendant and his female passenger were kept at the side of a busy interstate while this investigation went on. The only basis, the original basis for the officer's suspicion was that Mr. Johnson was nervous. Now, this court has said in the past that that is a consideration that one can validly make in terms of whether some sort of criminal activity is afoot. But it's been discredited recently in a number of Seventh Circuit decisions because that in itself is very subjective. And in the particular facts here, Mr. Johnson's nervousness did not seem to get greater. In fact, the officers didn't really notice it after that initial stop. Now, the other factor that the government relies on is the fact that Mr. Johnson had a criminal history. What they described as an extensive criminal history for drugs. Now, Mr. Johnson was asked about that during the stop, and he freely admitted that he was on parole at the time, even said that he had the parole officer's permission to be on this trip. And there was nothing about that that really increased the officer's suspicion level, or at least it shouldn't have.
When did he say that there... dog would alert on the car because somebody had smoked marijuana in there recently?
Well, what happened was...
Time sequence. When did that happen?
Right. Well, what happened was after the trooper was done, he issued a warning ticket, and he asked for consent. Mr. Johnson said, well, I'd rather get on my way or something to that effect. That's when the trooper told Johnson he was going to search the vehicle with the canine, and he patted Johnson down. Now, at that time, there was no statement about someone having smoked marijuana in the car earlier. That didn't come until that officer took the female passenger out and was patting her down. And while that happened, the canine officer was talking with Johnson, and that's when Johnson said someone smoked marijuana earlier.
That was before the dog.
That was before. That was before the dog walked around. But my point about that is you had two people taken out of a vehicle, patted down for weapons and frisked on the side of a busy interstate before there was really reasonable suspicion to detain them for that long. And so, Your Honors, if you consider all of that, in spite of the fact that this was a relatively brief detention by some people's standards, this court should find that it was not sufficient to detain Mr. Johnson for that search.
Okay.
If there are no other questions.
Thanks, Sir
Thank
Alvarado.
You.
Ms. Mullen.
May it please the Court. Linda Mullen on behalf of the United States. Judge Evans, I have to start with your question because I fear that I was decidedly unhelpful in my statement of facts on that particular issue, which is what is the chronology, when did the defendant say the dog would alert and when did the officers pat him down? And as I was preparing for oral argument and realizing that I think I said both in the statement of facts, I went back and scoured the transcript and the magistrate's finding and the district court's finding, and here's why I think there's some confusion. Both officers, Trooper Ent and Trooper Morrow, and I'm going to actually give you page citations in the transcript here, said both things. Trooper Ent on page 16 says the canine walked around and then the defendant and the passenger were patted down, suggesting obviously that the comment came beforehand. Later in his testimony, it reads as though, and this is pages 26, 27, and 52, it reads as though the officers patted down the defendant, and then he said the dog would alert. So there's a conflict within Trooper Ent's testimony. Then we get to Trooper Morrow. Pages 68 and 69, he says that they told the defendant they were going to walk the dog, and the defendant responded that the dog would alert. All right. Then on page 70, Trooper Morrow says it was just prior to the canine sniff that the defendant was patted down, which suggests that he had already made the comment. And on page 85, he testifies that the defendant was patted down, and then the defendant asked Morrow about the canine and made the comment that the canine would alert. So both troopers testify, mix up the chronology. There's no focus in the suppression hearing transcript on that conflict in testimony, both within the testimony and between the two officers. The magistrate found that the comment, that the pat-down occurred, and then the comment, the district court judge said the opposite. So we're here to support the district court judge's order, and there was obviously a factual resolution there that isn't clearly erroneous because it's supported.
You don't think that makes a big difference?
And I don't think that makes a big difference. I think that we argue in the brief that it's critical only in the sense that if the comment happened before the pat-down, it's clear that at that point they had reasonable justification for it. Had the comment never occurred, they still had reasonable suspicion to pat down the defendant. And again, this hyper-focus sort of on the timing we think is misplaced because this court said some 7.5 years ago in Childs that we're to look at the overall stop and the reasonableness of the stop and not have a hyper-focus on when was the warning ticket written, when were the insurance and registration and driver's license returned to the defendant, but overall was the stop reasonable. And here, as Mr. Alvarado concedes, the entire stop from the time the defendant was pulled over until the time the dog alerted was 15 to 17 minutes, somewhere in there. And the entire time from the point at which the trooper gave back the warning ticket, the written warning ticket, and the time when the defendant said that the dog's going to alert on the car was 1 minute. So here we have a situation where, you know, the overall stop itself is not unduly long. When you look at what happened during the stop, everything is reasonable. There's nothing that's constitutionally offensive here. The trooper pulls over the defendant on a probable cause stop, asks for the driver's license and the proof of insurance. The defendant is excessively nervous, not just a little nervous. The trooper testified, everyone's nervous when I pull them over. It's a nerve-wracking situation when you get pulled over by an officer. This man's hand was violently shaking up and down to the point where the paper was rattling. So that was noteworthy to the officer. And, of course, when he ran the criminal history check, he learned why. I mean, the defendant was on parole. He had an extensive criminal drug history. Went back and asked him about that. The Supreme Court has made clear, again, very recently in Arizona v. Johnson, that a moderate number of questions during the traffic stop are completely appropriate. Of course, that's the same thing that this court said in Childs. But to ask about, you know, why are you on parole? That's a completely appropriate question. It would have been irresponsible for the officer not to ask that. Is your travel in compliance with your parole? Does your parole officer know that you're traveling? Do you have anything illegal in the car? Can I search the car? Those are all completely appropriate, reasonable questions. All of that questioning lasted a mere minute after the time that the officer issued the warning ticket to the defendant.
So let me ask you this. Exactly what information gave the officers reasonable suspicion that he was armed and dangerous, particularly when you look at Morrow's testimony that he didn't suspect that Johnson had a weapon or any reason to suspect that he did.
I think Trooper Morrow was very focused on when, and I think his testimony was also, whenever he's running a dog around a car, the officers don't like to have the people stay in the car for obvious reasons. As the officer is walking with the canine in front of the car, both the officer and the canine are vulnerable. If someone does have something in the car, they know the dog is about to alert, and they're in the car with the keys. They could, you know, run over the officer and the dog. They could attempt to flee the scene. So it's his practice, at least, to always have the people out of the car. Once you have the people out of the car, in this particular case, you know that the defendant is on parole, that he has an extensive drug history, and that he is excessively nervous, and both officers testified to that. Officer Ent said his hand was violently shaking, and the other officer said, Officer Morrow, that when he approached, the defendant was trembling. So, you know...
So once he got out the car, though, there was no danger. He was going to run over the dog or run over the officer, so... relate to being armed and dangerous?
Well, I think that what the officers say is that when they have everyone out of the car and they're going to run the dog, their attention is on walking the dog around the car, and so they want to make sure that the people who are now outside of the car are still under control, that they maintain control of that situation. I do want to point out, though, I'm not sure that it matters that much, because let's assume that there was no reasonable suspicion for that pat down, that the officers had absolutely nothing. There was no nervousness here, there was no criminal drug history, nothing. It bore no fruit. And the fact is, the officers were going to run that dog either way, right? The pat down didn't, you know, prolong the stop. They had every intention of running the dog, and indeed did run the dog, and nothing that was uncovered during the pat down had any bearing on this case, ultimately. So while that issue came up at the suppression hearing, the magistrate judge asked counsel what the significance of that was. And I think the argument was, well, it's an important fact because of the fact that nothing was turned up, it makes it less reasonable to run the dog at that point. That gets back into that parsing out the time. Is it reasonable to extend the stop by 2, 3, 4 minutes to run the dog? The dog was already there, of course, by the time they returned the written warning at this point. And we know from this court's cases in Fink and in Carpenter that a 5-minute delay to wait for a dog at the end of a probable cause traffic stop is entirely reasonable. So here the dog's already there and they run the dog. So at that point, you know, we believe that they had reasonable suspicion to fear for their safety. They need to maintain control of that situation when they're running a dog. But even if they had no reasonable suspicion here, the pat down bore no fruit and they were going to run the dog at any rate, and it was the dog's alert that provided the probable cause to search the car. If the court has no further questions, I'll return the balance of my time.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank
Mullen.
You.
Mr. Alvarado?
Your Honor, just a couple of points about the timing of the learning that there was someone that had smoked marijuana in the car earlier. The magistrate judge got it the way I am presenting it to this court. He was there, and he saw the videotape. He heard the testimony of the officers. The district court relied on his report and recommendation of the facts, but then concluded something differently. I suggest that the videotape itself will provide some evidence of what happened there, although there was no audio.
Yeah,
for some
it, just
reason.
Can, it just can give us a sequence, because we have no audio. Right.
Right. There we have the length of the sequence, but we don't have the audio of what timing of what actually occurred. And just one other point, and I can't stress this too strongly. Ms. Mullen points out the nervousness of Mr. Johnson, his hand shaking and so forth. But if that means anything to this court, then it should also mean something that nothing about the rest of that stop indicated that he was someone who was armed and or dangerous to justify a pat-down not only of himself, but his female passenger. He actually was cooperative throughout this traffic stop, and he freely admitted he was on parole, which seems to me something in and of itself which would give a reason why he would be somewhat nervous. And so the reasonable suspicion...
Acknowledgement you're on parole, though, support the view of a trooper who's going to... change the circumstance by having the dog walk around, that a pat-down might be
That was before. Before the dog, before Johnson was patted down and before the walk around, he had told the trooper that he was on parole and that his parole officer knew about the trip.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, Mr. Alvarado. Would that not indicate some justification, perhaps, for a pat-down, that you're dealing with somebody who's been convicted of a crime?
Well, I think the fact that he freely admitted that and was truthful about that dispelled somewhat whatever suspicion he might have that Mr. Johnson was nervous initially. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Well, thank you, Ms. Mullen. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed to the...